Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Feed the Crew. Today, we have Monica Guerra, a costume designer and textile artist with a background in fashion design. She has a long history of credentials here, both national and international. So we really hope you'll enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the show, Monica.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to chat with you guys.
We're excited to chat with you after seeing all the things that you've been able to do in your career. I find this really fascinating. But introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Monica Guerra. I live in Houston. I have worked for the Houston Ballet for many, many, many years. And I started as a stitcher. I mean, we can talk about that later, but I started part-time when I was in college, and I was definitely the youngest person in the whole shop. And so it was very intimidating, yet exciting and scary, everything. But I started that. And then I went on to be a dyer painter, and I do design as well. And the costume design is really, I love, it's a passion. And I did study fashion design. So I do modern ballet basically. And yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Okay, so that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Tell us about your educational background, because I know you went to school for this.
Mm-hmm. So I studied fashion design, and I have an associate's degree in that. And I had always had the desire to move on to, you know, extend my education, mostly looking at Parsons or FIT, like many, you know, fashion design students do. And so that didn't happen. I started working while I was still in school. And so I pretty much had a good gig going, especially from the last jobs I would have, which, you know, were crap. Beauty advisor, you know, Lancome, rental costume, you know, all that crappy stuff. So I would go to school and work part time. And yeah, so that was education. But I will say that I have... I did learn a lot, but a lot of construction and draping skills, which is so essential for anybody going into design, costume design, fashion design. It's so, so essential. A lot of younger designers I know have this thing about, oh, they think it's so cool. Let me just draw some pretty pictures and, you know, come up with this idea that's, you know, out of nowhere. And that's all, you know, good, but you do need to know the background. For example, when I sketch, when I'm working with choreographers, I do sketches. And as I'm sketching, actually before I even sketch, I already have an idea of how it's going to be put together. Because if I don't have that idea, then it doesn't get drawn. And, but anyway, I did learn a lot organically. I was definitely, as I mentioned earlier, the youngest person in the costume shop when I started as a stitcher. So I got to learn so much from amazing, talented, highly skilled people. It was incredible. And we would have amazing designers that would come in from all around the world. At the time, they were designers that were mostly from London, Australia, some from New York. And I would just, it's like this little thing. We would be so excited, like waiting for the designer to come in, and we'd maybe like look them up or, read about them. And, we had already seen their sketches beforehand a lot of times in the costume shop, you know, as a stitcher or draper, whatever position that is. And it was exciting. And so now it's kind of fun. I know both sides because I've been in both sides and am in both sides. So it's exciting that I can be that person now and, you know, where people are like, oh, hi, you know, and I'm like, I'm a normal person just like you. It's really cool. And I get to meet amazing people that way. But sorry, I was going to circle back to working in the costume shop, meeting amazing people. I worked with different designers like Marty Pacadenas. I think he's won Tony Award. And most importantly, Desmond Healy. The very first show I worked with at the Houston Ballet, he was a designer I didn't know who it was. He was already, quite an elderly man at this point. I just thought it was cool. He had amazing, if anybody knows who Desmond Healy is, obviously that's hearing this, they know he's a multi Tony Award winning designer, set and costume designer. And he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. So there he was. And I remember after he left, one of my coworkers said, you know who that is? And I was like, well, I know his name is Desmond Healy and he's a costume designer from, England. And they said, no, do you know who he is? Do you really know who he is? They took out a costume design book like from the 70s or 80s. And there he is mentioned.
Oh my gosh.
Like, right? It's like, I was like, oh, oh. But it was so cool just to hear the stories. Like, the assistant at the time, she would take him to this party supply store we have in town. And she would tell stories about how she would take him to those clear, it's a party supply. So they had a lot of clear plastic punch bowls, like egg crates, like spoons for punch. And she said that he would go ransack that and make these amazing chandeliers out of this. And close up, it looked like craziness, right? Because it kind of is. Far away, it was this immaculate piece of art chandelier. And it was just crazy. I didn't really know exactly everything I was surrounded by, but I quickly learned,
And that's really cool.
It was pretty neat.
So how did you move from being a stitcher to being, you said, in the dye shop? And obviously you went on from there, but like, how did even that first transition happen?
So that was really interesting. When I was a stitcher, there was this amazing woman, Lisa Sakaris, and we're good friends. And she is the most amazing person. She is so interesting, fascinating, but one of the most kindest people you'll ever meet as well. And I was so drawn to her. And she was the dyer painter at the time for Houston Grand Opera and the Houston Ballet. At the time, they shared the dyer painter, and she was always so fascinating. And I was just always drawn to her, and I loved what she did. And the way she spoke about color was, I became obsessed with it. She later taught a couple courses, and I took those courses that she taught. And also, she kind of took me under her wing, and I got to work with her there. My boss allowed me to work with her sometimes, and so it just grew from there. And so I learned all the ropes from her as far as the dye work goes, and some of the painting as well. And years later, she went on to do. She still does fabric art and works for different companies, and she also teaches. She was a professor and she teaches as well. So she went on to do her amazing things, but I then took on that position. So then I became the dyer painter, and I've loved it. And that's something that's been, it's so cool because I've been the resident dyer painter for the Houston Ballet for many, many years. And I also did that freelance for the Houston Grand Opera too on the side. I didn't tell you guys that I did audition for Project Runway many, many years ago too.
Ooh. So
that's another layer of fun stuff.
Okay, so I thought about doing that.
Did you?
I did, but then I saw the contract and I was like, there's some shady stuff in here. You actually did the, you auditioned for Project Runway, mm-hmm. but you weren't actually on it.
Right. Yeah. No, I was never on it, but I got really far in the auditions. I met Tim Gunn and everything. I was put in front of him. I waited in line. It was in New York. And I went with my sister, Veronica, and we stood in line probably for maybe like 8 hours or nine. I have no idea. Wow. And it was many, many years ago. It was during towards the beginning stages of, Project Runway. And so, yeah, that was kind of crazy. So there was, all these people, of course, the screening, right? The screening is like crazy, sure. Crazy. You have to show your portfolio, your clothes, everything to all these people. And then they tell you either to go one way out or they tell you to go another mm-hmm. way to go into a big conference room. And I had not seen people go into another conference room. I just seen people get ushered out. And even the guy in front of me said, he's like, this is the third time I auditioned. And I'm like, man, like, good luck to you. It's like, that's really cool. And so he unfortunately didn't make it because he went out the door. And then I went, and then they tell me, they're like, somebody's coming to get your stuff. They're going to usher you to this other room. And I'm like, where? I hadn't seen anybody go to that other room for like, I don't know, like hours. And so, yeah, that was kind of cool. Next thing you know, they're telling you you're about to be in front of Tim Gunn. They're like, you know, stuffing a mic pack down your pants.
And right.
telling you that when you walk in, there's going to be an X on the floor. You walk to it. There's going to be a rack to your right. There's going to be a ton of media and lights to your left. Don't be worried by that. And so, so I love it. Tim Gunn told me right when I walked in, he of course has a headshot of me and my whole application and everything. He's like, hi, Monica. He's like, you look great. And I was like, oh my God, I used that for years. I was like, Tim Gunn told me I look good. So
there you go. Well, no, and I find that kind of thing inspirational too, because when we first started seeing documentaries, you know, shows like that, because it kind of is documentary style, it kind of sounded a little disheartening for the folks that don't get in, but it's great to know that even though you didn't make it to the show, it doesn't mean you're not successful. It doesn't mean that you're not really super good at what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I saw so many
one time you got turned down or whatever.
Yeah. Wow. And I didn't shed one tear about it. I saw a lot of people, they were like bawling in the bathroom, you know, and very upset. But I honestly, because as I was waiting for those 8-9 hours outside, you know, I saw so many people, you could take models with you, you know, wearing your clothes, or you could actually take it in a hanger, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I saw so much work of so many people. A lot of these designers, they're still in school or fresh out of school. And let's face it, we don't really know like a whole lot, right? I mean, when it's a big thing is experience. I'm a huge component of experience. Like, you know, it's like you make yourself as a sponge and you absorb everything you can. I mean, that's how I learned so much about designing too, working with other designers and being in the costume shop. It's like my eyes are open, my ears are open, you know? And that's how I could see, it's like, how is that designer interacting with my boss, the head of the costume shop? Or how are they interacting with drapers? And you know, so you take it like that, and then you kind of make it your own, you know? But yeah, that was a cool opportunity with Project Runway. Like I walked away feeling, man, a lot of those people, I'm not a fan of what they have, and the quality like sucks really badly. And so I walked away thinking, I'm doing actually pretty good, and I feel good about it. And I'm okay about it. It's like, that's what I want people to know. And it's like, if your hustle is hard, then you're going places. That's what it comes down to. You know? Because my hashtag should be hustle. It's like hustle.
Well, I have a question for clarity. I think all of our listeners understand what dyeing is, but is painting, is that what it sounds like? Do you take fabric and paint on the fabric?
Yes, it means all kinds of things. Yeah, you can, I stencil, I create, sometimes I create my own stencils, I create my own printing, you know, methods, all kinds of ways. I hand paint, I do any kind of way you think that an actual artist can paint, I can do that. But I actually love the fine painting, the very finite detailed painting. I love that too. But yeah, it's really cool. You get to also, as the dyer painter, you get to a lot of times work very closely with the designers, which is amazing. I love that. And sometimes they say, you know what? I had this one designer, Christian Fredrickson. He's now gone on. He's from Australia. He went in and he said, you know, he goes, I want the color palette of this piece to be Think Prairie and High Noon. Those were literally his words to me.
Okay, like, that paints a picture.
It does, right? And so so I went to do the dye work within this realm, you know, the dried grasses, you know, the, you know, sun you know, drenched canvases, all this stuff. But then of course I did a lot of painting as well with it. And so you kind of, and then some people just say, oh, I want this feeling. There was this ballet piece, it's called Murmurations. It's beautiful. The choreographer did not have an actual costume designer. So he asked me, he said, I want the feeling of murmuration, you know, birds in the path and the patterns of murmuration. And so I did all kinds of, he didn't know exactly what he wanted or have a color palette or anything. So I went ahead and I cut out, I drew, you know, birds in these formations, clustered further away, larger scale, smaller scale, anything you can think of. And I did all these, and I'd screen printing, and I did so many samples for him. And then he finally chose to go somewhere, you know, completely different. But that's what I love about it. You create so many samples for them to see of, you know, to kind of basically hint at, you know, what they might, because sometimes you're, as a choreographer, you might not be a complete visionary, but sometimes you see, sometimes you don't. And so it kind of helps create his vision. So it's really a beautiful thing to be able to be a part of that, you know?
Okay, apparently my space bar wasn't working. Sorry. That's really cool though, that you're able to like work so closely with the designers. Is that how you got into the designing, or how did that come about?
That came about, that is a crazy, amazing story. Okay.
Well, we want to hear it.
Yes, I'm all here. Let me see. I don't want to leave out too many details. So I was stitching at the time, but I had already begun to do the dyeing and painting as well. So I was kind of doing both, mostly dyeing and painting, but the costume shop would use me, you know, sporadically as needed, right? So at the time, my then boss, she comes to me and one of my coworkers, Travis Halsey, who he was an incredible costume designer as well. At the time, his position was a draper pattern maker. So you have him, draper pattern maker, me, dyer painter / stitcher. So our boss comes to us and she says, and him and I, and my boss knew that he was incredibly talented. She knew that I always had side gigs. I mean, like hustler, like I was at the time, I would, by the way, at the time I was also designing one of a kind little pieces that I would sell at a boutique, you know, in a really cool part of Houston called Montrose. So I was like always hustling, doing stuff, right? And she'd seen some of the stuff and she knew I always wanted to design all that good stuff. She said, you know, the artistic director, Stanton Welch, he's been working on this concept, this idea of an anime ballet. But he doesn't know if there's other designers he's worked with, but he doesn't know if they're really up for the challenge because this is a rather weird. It was kind of the way he would explain it. It was a Mad Max / anime, right? And Travis and I, you know, were very, very young at the time and, you know, on board, obviously. And so we're like, would you like to design it? We're like, yes, how is this even possible? And so what's really cool, I just want to interject here that I never had the chance. I've worked with so many people who have bachelor degrees, master degrees, and I'm here with an associates, and I've never even like worked for community theater. My first job that I designed, I went straight to professional theater, professional ballet. And it's also a company that has such acclaim, has international, you know, recognition. And so it was, I mean, to say it was a blessing is an understatement. It was a wild ride. And maybe we were so young, we were just up for the challenge. We didn't realize how crazy it was. I mean, I'm sure there was judgment and talk and all kinds of stuff going on, but who cares? You know, as a creative, this is a dream come true, honestly. So we were asked to do that. So then the piece is called A Doll's House. And it was basically about all these dolls, so to speak, anime inspired dolls, getting into a fight and basically. And it's not obviously based on the Ibsen, you know, play. It's off of a poem written in the 80s. And so we worked closely with Stanton on that. And Travis designed a certain amount of the dolls, the characters, and I designed others. So we were co-designers, but then we designed very separately. And that was basically my my first, you know, break. And there we were. It was just crazy. And I did all the, you know, dyeing and painting and crazy amount of stuff. Of course, they were dolls. So it was, you could be real creative. And they go at the end, they go to war with each other, the dolls. And so Stanton wanted basically, you know, a little bit kind of like blood almost showcase. So I would use like, you know, bright fuchsia as blood or bright neon yellow. And it was crazy town. So yeah, that was an incredible experience. And from that, you know, there was a dancer and Garrett Smith, he danced for the company, and he saw some of that work, and he was an aspiring choreographer. And he was so young too at the time. And he saw, he really like liked my stuff. And then we spoke later, maybe about a year or two later, he needed some help. He came to me, he said, there's a show I'm doing in New York, this gala piece. There's basically zero budget. There's like, you know, but he said, I would love.
Everyone's favorite words.
Yes. And in the theater community, we know it quite well.
Well, and before you go on, I just want to be clear for our listeners, because these are things I wanted to hit on from your bio, and this is fantastic information. But the first thing that you were talking about working with Stanton Welsh, this was 2008. So was this right after you got out of school? Was this one of the first things that you did?
Yeah, I mean, I might have still been in school, I think, at the time.
Ah, so this, which was very early on, led to your next, which is typically how this works. The first leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is way back in the beginning of your career, and then it led to working with Garrett Smith. So let me let you go on. Thanks.
Yeah. And so he asked me to do, if I would, you know, help him do this piece. It was just a pas de deux, you know, for two people basically. And he was dancing it, and he had another dancer, a female, that was going to dance this piece with him. And so I said, sure. And this was, you know, a year or 2 years after, it wasn't immediately after. And so I did that for practically, you know, no money. I basically just charged for fabric and that kind of thing. And because there was no budget, And it just went on from there. But he was always so appreciative, and he loved my work. And he said, you know, he said, I have big plans. We'll see. And I'm not, you know, I won't forget this, and I'm going to pay you back somehow. And then maybe, you know, I don't know how many years later, he came to me. It was several years later. He came to me and he said, I have a big, you know, show. And so we've worked together, you know, many, many times now, many times. And it's really important to, I think, if you can create a relationship with someone, especially as designer, choreographer, and I've seen that many times as a costume or working in the costume shop, a lot of times choreographers, if they work well with a designer or they like a designer, they will use them quite a bit, lighting designer or costume. And building relationships is really important. And that was never my, you know, my intent. It just happened. And it's an amazing thing, because it was just organic. It was really organic the way it worked. And it was just kind of meant to be. But I've worked obviously with many other choreographers as well. And sometimes you just never know. As far as I've worked with the artistic director for Ballet Austin, and he's an incredible person and an incredible choreographer. I don't know if Austin knows that they have him in the city, but he's amazing. And yeah, I actually got the gigs with him because it was my second big show I designed for a female choreographer, and a very provocative piece. And he was in the audience. He happened to be in the audience. And he told Stephen Mills, artistic director for Ballet Austin, he told him about me. He's like, you know, maybe there's this young designer. I just saw this piece. You might want to, you know. And Stephen Mills, he did, at the time, he definitely liked using local talent. And so he, next thing you know, I'm at work a week later, and they're asking me, they're like, is this a correct email? And I'm like, yeah, that's my correct email. It's like, okay, well, because the artistic director for Ballet Austin wants to contact you. It's like, oh, okay.
And this is where a lot of folks getting into the industry, you hear that phrase, it's about who you know, right? Mm-hmm. And it not that means that you need to know these people when you're in high school and when you're in your 20s, early 20s, getting into college. it's about who you're meeting,
mm-hmm.
and getting that relationship going and building that spider web of connections from there. So this is a fantastic tale. I'm so glad.
Can I just
you.
Add to that really quick?
Yeah, please.
I just want to say that, yes, it's very people I work with or I come across. It's like, because my work ethic has been crazy insane. There's been times where I have a full-time job and I'm designing 3 shows at the same time. Plus I'm a designer and product developer for an athletic line too on the side. So sometimes I think back and I'm like, how the hell am I doing all this? But when you just like go, that's all you know. But I want to say that it's important to always, whatever we do, always do it at your very best, you know, whether it's like you're sweeping floors, whether you're, you know, painting the wall, whatever you're doing, you do it with excellence. And yeah, and what I tell people, it's like, somebody's always going to notice. Somebody will always notice. How did I know that Garrett Smith at 18, 20 years old was going to take an interest in my work then as well? But it just happens. Like, you never know who you're going to run into, who you're going to meet, and you know, make them feel heard and special, and just take interest, I think. Yeah,
absolutely agree. And I couldn't agree more with you on the whatever task it is, do it to your best. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that I know for sure I have a good assistant on a large production, I end up with an assistant. Mm-hmm. My best assistant is the one who can go get the order and get it right and bring the receipt.
Exactly. That's right.
And it's right. As an intern though, those are never your jobs. Let me point that out. An assistant is a paid person. I paid them good money to go fetch the coffee.
That's very
important. I used to fetch the coffee, so it's all good.
Yeah. And also, I just want to say, it's also very important. I think we've all worked in costume shops where people that are in costume shops, where sometimes a designer or an invited guest they don't take time to speak to stitchers or other staff. You know, we see this kind of elitist sort of situation. I'm better than somebody else. But I think in the long run, that really ends badly for the designer in the long run, honestly, because the more courteous you are, I mean, that could go for the lighting designer, for anybody, right? Working, you know, theater is a team. We are a team, and we can't do theater one without the other. And that's just the truth of it. And there's so many aspects to it. And if you kind of, you know, cross the wrong person, it could be bad. It's important to be, you know, to be open and to be friendly to everybody around you. Yeah.
Well, the bad part about the person in the higher up designer who's so in their head that they can't meet the people that are working with them, they're the ones that are losing out on the who you're going to meet, because mm-hmm. you could be meeting the next big thing by mm-hmm. seeing who's working with you on your project.
Yes.
And meeting those people.
I agree with that.
Well, and I've heard it's not necessarily about designers with like the people in the costume shop, but I have heard stories about like actors who are extremely difficult with the people in the costume shop and think they're above them. And I have heard tell of like, oh, if you piss off the wardrobe staff too much, they might just continue to sew your costume an inch smaller around every day and then just be like, I don't know why you're not fitting into it nicely. Have fun on stage.
Oh, no.
No, that does tell me that's not true. Tell me that's just, you know.
I've heard stories. I've never experienced it personally, but I have heard stories.
I've heard stories too, Madeline.
Okay, be careful how you treat people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get like your, obviously you've had design work now for ballet companies all over the world, not just all over the US. Are you getting those through the choreographers that you've worked with consistently? Or are you finding them like, how are they finding you too?
Yeah, I it's through the choreographers I'm working with. Honestly, it's some of the choreographers, mainly Garrett, other choreographers are more local to whatever state, city they're located in. But Garrett is a freelance choreographer. And he does live, he's American, but he does live in Spain, in Barcelona. So he just chooses to live there because he loves it. I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, why not? It's gorgeous.
I love Barcelona too.
Why aren't we living in Spain? Yeah, so he works all around the world. And so I've gotten to go to amazing places like Oslo, Bordeaux. I was actually in Bordeaux when COVID happened. I have had to have a very interesting conversation with one of the heads there and say, if I cannot go back to my country, you know, will I be taken care of? Because I didn't know, you know?
Oh, wow. That's so crazy.
Yeah, I was getting crazy phone calls, you know, 2-4 in the morning over there. And I'm like, what is going on? And everybody's like, can you get out? Can you? And I was like, why? Why are you guys freaking? Because see, what's funny is at the beginning, they're in France, but of course, Bordeaux, it's not like I'm in Paris, but Bordeaux, it's a small town. I mean, incredibly beautiful. I fell in love with it. But they thought all the Americans were crazy. You know, because they would hear the stories about the toilet paper, you know, and just everything, like how we were ransacking, right? Everything.
To be fair, it sounds crazy from this side too.
Exactly.
I was going to say, to be fair, I thought we were crazy. So yeah.
I know. I think people they gravitate towards the stories they want to gravitate to. And so they all thought Americans were nuts. And then I get back here and they're like the Europeans, they're the worst ones. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, it's, but yeah, it was quite a challenge getting back. I had probably, I think, 3 canceled flights. And when I arrived in America, it was insane seeing the guy walk in with a hazmat suit and into the airplane. So that was fun.
Wow. But, tell us about that though. You're our first guest to say that they were international. We've had guests that say, you know, I was stopped right before I got to the airport because things were shutting down. So What was it like to come back? I mean, yeah.
Well, by then I had caught wind. I had to shorten my trip in Bordeaux by almost a week. And I think I returned on something like March 16th or 18th. And so it had already begun. And so I was from Bordeaux. I went to, I think it was Amsterdam. And what's interesting in Amsterdam, I was speaking to other people on different flights, and there were people there from France, from Greece, from Spain, from Italy. And so we're all in this hub, right, together, because that wasn't the thing just yet, I guess. And so they have to, and there were people that were working that they would ask you if you had been to China or I don't know where else they were asking, but they were asking if you said no, then they would like put a sticker on your passport. And there was so many processes, but yeah, once, that was a long flight, long several flights. But yeah, it all worked out. But of course, they tell you have to quarantine for the 2 weeks and everything. And so that was expected.
Okay. I was going to say, so yeah, I can't imagine the stress of having to get here. And then once you arrived, you said somebody came onto the plane with a hazmat suit.
Yeah, there was the first man that walked into the airplane. It was kind of like a hazmat suit situation. And there was another woman that later walked in, you know, behind him. She just had the shield and masks and the whole thing. She didn't have the hazmat suit, but yeah, it was a little alarming. Like, right. Oh, this is for real.
Right. Oh, that would have scared the crap out of me.
Yeah. Well, by then I had already spoken to many of my friends and looked up, you know, English news on my phone at that point and kind of like already had an idea, but yeah, it was crazy. And of course I was traveling alone, as I do, you know, anytime I travel for work. Right. And so I was just like, okay, well, you know, as long as I can get home at some point, it's going to be okay.
Great. So you're from Houston? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've lived here most of my life. Yes.
Okay. So when you come in from Amsterdam, you did not fly directly into Houston.
No, at that time they had us all fly into Atlanta for some reason. I think it was Atlanta and somewhere else that were like the two hubs of where they had people internationally fly into. And so it was Atlanta where we, you know, first landed, yeah, in America.
Wow. And so they put you through whatever paces they put you through in Atlanta before flying you to Houston. And then said quarantine in Houston for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Just making sure you actually got home before they said, lock your door. You're not allowed to talk to anybody. No.
Thanks. I know. Right. It's like, God, that's the last thing I would have needed. Do you have to stay in Atlanta for 2 weeks? Like, hell no.
Right. I had one friend that came back from, I think he was in France too, but he was on his honeymoon and they came back early and self-quarantined. So they came back right before all the shutdown, you know, making things harder, but they decided to come home early. Yeah.
Wow. The kind of fun thing is I brought this like fancy wine and all these like pastries that I was going to share with friends and family.
You got to eat them all yourself.
My boyfriend and I, we're like, quarantining is good. I had this foie gras. I had, you know, this fancy, like this little bitty thing. And
so jealous.
Oh man, it was cool, you know, for a couple weeks, I guess.
Back when we all thought it was only going to be a couple of weeks.
I know, right? God, that's the truth.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you've managed to pick up a little bit of work during 2020. Is that what I've seen correctly on like on your social media? So, but I mean, how long did the shutdown really affect you and how has it affected what you're doing with your career?
Yeah, well, it's affected it a lot. I mean, honestly, I would have seen the show in Bordeaux where I was. It was to open early April 4th, I think. Of course, I had to leave, you know, a lot sooner than that. And so I wasn't there, obviously. And then, of course, that canceled. And then later they said, oh, well, maybe we'll do it, you know, in September. They ended up doing it, I think, in November recently. Of course, I wasn't there. But it went on virtually. And there's been some other shows I've been lucky to do. There was another piece, and there's like Russian TV that they were doing a dance piece, and they asked, they were interested in some of Garrett's choreography and this piece that he did for Pennsylvania Ballet. And I designed that, I guess it was 2019 at this point. And so they contacted me because they wanted to basically somewhat, you know, copy as much as possible the designs that I had designed for that piece. It was just for a potted up fee for that. I gave them sketches, all that stuff. And so of course I wasn't able to go there. I didn't need to go. And then recently, a ballet dancer who's seen some of the work that Garrett and I have done as well, he's doing a television show in China. And so he asked if you know, they could use my design. And so that kind of thing as well too. And so, but outside of our jobs that we've had planned, some design work has been, of course, canceled. And the costume shop is not running at all. And we don't know, you know, we don't know what that looks like, what that means, eventually getting called back or not. I don't know. So it's a good thing, I guess. I've been, you know, doing a lot of other kind of projects because that's what's kind of kept me busy. The one project that I was doing that wasn't related to theater, that's now the main you know, project job I have now. And so yeah.
Is that the athletic wear line?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Which, I mean, what brand is it? Like, what line, what is it called? In case anybody wants to look it up.
Yeah, it's called Zip Hers. And it's basically, I'm a designer and product developer for that line and many other things, assistant, you know, counselor, I don't know. So yeah, it's the CEO is Debbie Mercer. She's an incredible, incredible woman. She was always an avid marathon runner and a hiker. And so she would go and do, you know, hike Machu Picchu, hike all these other Grand Canyon amazing things. And she would run, you know, 25 plus, you know, miles. We're talking about like serious. We're not talking like, you know, 5K or something. And she kept running across women that were having to, and it sounds crazy. It's like, and this is the thing too. It's like, you have to be open. When things like this happen, like a pandemic, you have to be open, I think, to opportunities and know how to possibly, if, you know, reinvent yourself, right? And so she came to me. I found her through an employee at the Houston Ballet at that time. And she said, oh, they're looking, you know, this, she's looking for a designer and she doesn't know anything about this. And she's wanting to develop a line. And so basically it's, there's a zipper that runs the, a visible zipper that runs the front to the back of these like, incredibly designed tights and leg wear. It's bottom wear. Hiking shorts, hiking pants, all kinds of different weights, fleece lined, yoga type tights. And it allows women to basically take a stand if they have to go to the restroom. It allows them to basically-
Hey, that's where you're going. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's almost like being empowered like a man because so many times Debbie would go to hiking group, you know, excursions and then it's like, there's a, one of my friends that's a woman that's exposing her whole butt, you know, by going to the restroom or if it's cold temperatures and that kind of thing. And so she's kind of come up with this concept and, I don't, you know, I exercise, but my thing is like weightlifting. It's not hiking or running. And so it's different, but I'm definitely in that field, some aspect, so I can understand and I can, you know, I can relate to, but yeah, it's been incredible. The amount of, you know, like the comments we've gotten that so many people are, and just to develop that product, the panel on the inside, the, you know, the, cause people are like, why would a zipper be in that part of my body? But it's you know, just to produce the inner panel that's the closest to your body in that area, it that took like almost a year to develop, you know, size, you know, width, you know, wicking fabrics, all that. It's a lot of research that goes into it, a lot. But yeah, it's an incredible product that we're still trying to develop more products and but it's doing okay.
That's great. That's really great. Thanks. And I'm sorry, one more time, what's the name of it? What's the name of the line?
It's called Zippers, Z-I-P-H-E-R-S, zip and then hers.
Nice. Nice. So we just talked about how the pandemic has affected you and it sounds like you're actually finding some things to keep yourself busy, but it also doesn't sound like it's something that's going to continue on for you. Maybe in small parts along the way, which can happen, you know, they want to make some adjustments to the line, they'll call you, but that's more of a, at that point, sounds more of a side job. Am I right?
With zippers?
Yeah. And what I'm getting at is, I'm wondering if this is as fulfilling for you as your career, as you have had in other designs. So, you know, what's next for you kind of thing. Is mm-hmm. that going to continue on as a side job? Is it something you're going to focus on?
Yeah, well, I've been affiliated with Zippers for maybe about 4 or 5 years now, because we started it a while back from concept to creating samples, to work, trying to contact manufacturing companies, to do the research for fabrics, for, I mean, so many samples, marketing companies. It is like, constant. It's a lot. And there's always some kind of problem or some kind of, you know, something that you have to run into. So there's always that, but I am part partner of that company. I have been for a few years, so I'll be, you know, dealing with that always, I think. And it's a company and that I believe in. And the owner, Debbie, she's an incredible, strong, you know, brilliant woman. So nothing there. But yeah, of course, I miss designing costumes. I miss doing all that stuff, the creative aspect of it. And I've kind of done some art through COVID. And sometimes I'm like, what have I been doing with my time? Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy how when we have the full-time job and you're doing, like I always had so many projects constantly. And then I still manage to work out, or you still manage to like cook dinner or something, right? Or to hang out with the boyfriend or whatever it is, or the friends. And then this happens and you're like, I don't have time for anything. And like, how did I do it before? how did I do it?
That's definitely something I've been discovering, because my calendar has been starting to fill up with, just a lot of small things, like nothing major. But then all of a sudden, like my calendar went from completely empty to super full. And even though super full was what I was used to, because I've gotten used to it being so empty, now I'm like, how am I supposed to do all of this?
That sounds very familiar. Yeah.
And you're like, but you've been doing this for years, exactly like this. It was just that you had those months of nothing that all of a sudden you're like, wait, how did I do this?
Yeah, I know. It's
a lot of people wish they had the same problem though.
Right? Yeah.
So I hope I didn't phrase that question wrong for you. I was wondering about how that was going to fit in with you down the road, but it sounds like it was something that you have been doing. Mm-hmm. And working it out all along the way as, you know, part of your own business of being a designer.
Yeah, I've always done side jobs. I've always also, I love thrift store shopping. I love vintage clothes and vintage accessories. So also when I was younger, she loves fashion too. And we would go thrift stores, and then we loved it so much. And we found so many cool things for friends all the time. And we're like, oh, I got you this, this would look great on you. And then we thought, well, you know, maybe we can like make a little bit of money doing this. So we were part of a store that did resale, you know, so we did all that too on the side of doing school and working. And then I sold, you know, I did one of a kind creations also. Like I think I said, I sold stuff at a fashion boutique for about 4 years. So there's always something to do, I think. But I think it's a good time to, you know, I guess reinvent ourselves, right? I mean, we always have to be open to that. And open to opportunities. You know, the thing with Zippers, with the athletic line, it's something that at first I was like, God, this sounds really kind of crazy, you know? And I think it would sound crazy to some people that might be not, I call people that would be interested in this, I call them outdoor adventurists, because that's our market, basically. It's not the typical, like, it's not going to be the gym rat. It's not going to be the 5K person. But I say all that to say that, you know, it's good to stay open to things. And, you know, we can use our, obviously our talent and our skills in so many other different ways. And thank God. I mean, it's, you know, it's something I have now and it's working out well, but I'm of course staying very positive that everything will be maybe by, you know, late this year, maybe. Yeah. Maybe we'll be back. You know,
we all have our fingers crossed for that. We're all praying for that. Definitely. Year we can get back to things.
Definitely. I'm Garrett and I are in contact quite a bit, and there might be a show that we do, maybe Hungary. There's a ballet company in Hungary, and they are, sorry, I don't know exactly where it is. I know it's not Budapest. Unfortunately, because I would love to go back. But I always tell Garrett, I was like, get Switzerland on board, talk to Switzerland companies, because I want to go there and I want a free ride there. No, but yeah, so we might be doing something in Hungary, maybe November or so. There's talk about that. Whether I might, you know, be going there or not, I don't know. But you know, it can all be done from at a distance. Honestly, yeah.
Do you think we're going to see more of that as we go forward? Do you that people are going to ask you to stay working remotely and just create their designs, send them off, and maybe have costume shops on Zoom and say, "Hey, is this what you were talking about? Is this how you picture it looking?" You know,
it's very possible. It's very possible, because honestly, I do quite a bit of that already as is. There's shows that, like when I worked for the Oslo, the Norwegian Opera House, that was a year in the making, a complete year in the making. And I did get to go to Oslo actually 3 times. That was incredible. But there's other companies I work with that maybe I've been working with them for that long, from concept, to reality. And I might end up going once for fittings to check on how things are fitting and rework some things if I need the drapers to rework things and have the meetings with the fabric dyers there as well. Because I do use a lot, since I'm a fabric artist, I do love that. So I utilize that as much as I can in my work, and also creates a unique, collection, as I call it. I use a lot of fashion terminology in theater. I'm so foreign, I guess, but.
That's okay. So for some of our listeners who may not know what a draper is, mm-hmm. would you explain that piece to us real quick?
Sure. Someone who is incredibly skilled in creating patterns, you have a dress form. Some people call it a mannequin, but it's a dress form. And you drape fabric onto the dress form to fit specific sizes and to create the shapes that you need in order to create the, there's flat pattern is used as well for things. Some people, it just depends. Some people like using flat pattern, but draping is a really easy way to create something quickly. And you can always create a pattern off of it to translate it on paper after the fact. But yeah, you just get shapes. You use a lot of pins, you use shape, and it's great.
And the draper versus flat pattern, that's really just a matter of personal preference of the pattern maker, quite exactly. honestly.
Exactly.
Although certain styles do lend themselves better to one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Thank you for that, ladies. I did want to clarify that they're artistic in nature. And So you hit that right on the head for me. Thank you.
Well, and I've been told by a draper before that they have to be just as creative as the designer, because they design 75% of the back of the garments, because most designers don't think about it in the round. They just design the front.
I do back views on my illustrations, just so we're clear.
Okay.
I don't leave anything to interpretation, because I am, I'm very, and people that have worked with me will, also understand and relate to this, that I'm particular. I'm very particular. And so I think that's, that's something important. I think you have to not flee away from quality. We've all worked with places. I think in theater, sometimes people will say, it's like, just do it quickly. Do it. There's this saying I've heard before, down and dirty, with stitching. I'm sure you've heard it, right, Madeline?
Oh, yeah.
And that always bothers me, because just because you are seeing something, it is not fashion that we see up close. Theater, you always see it from 12 feet and further away, obviously. So you won't be able to see every single tiny stitch, every piping, every, bit of detail. But the thing is, it's there. And I think if you're a good designer and you can make things pop, and you know how to create texture, and that's really what it comes down to. But sorry, I forgot the question.
No, you're fine. But I definitely, off of that, you have to sometimes explain to people, there's a difference between doing it quickly and doing it well. I can either take more time, do it properly, and it won't have to be done again, yes. Or I can do it in 2 minutes and you'll have to fix again in an hour after exactly. It comes off stage.
Exactly. And happens all the time. Takes about the same amount of time to do it right.
You're right. It takes about the same amount of time to do it right as to do it wrong. So you might as well do it right.
I know.
Have you ever had any big disasters with designing where there was maybe a shop couldn't understand your ideas, or just costumes weren't coming together, or had to be redone completely?
Yeah. I have. It's interesting. I've actually, and this is where having knowledge of, draping and stitching comes in really handy, because there's been times where I like a specific look of something. I use the word organic sometimes, this certain kind of look where fabric is like all wrinkled, but it's wrinkled so, precisely that there's a pattern to it, but it's not symmetrical, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. So, but this kind of, it really reads as texture, and it's really beautiful, especially in ballet, where sometimes you work with choreographers, or there's a specific piece where the choreographer says specifically, it can't be for the women, it cannot be long skirts, it can't be flowing, it has to be a leotard, or, you know, the booty shorts, as we call them, or it just has to be a bodice, or it has to be all stretch, or it can be an actual, you know, woven, you know, corset or something like that. But I don't know, it's a very interesting situation sometimes, the way, sorry, I lost my train of thought. What was I talking
about? Disasters. We were working up to the disaster.
So that, thank you. That happens all the time. So if I do a design like that, a lot of times I'm just like, well, no, it's actually this way. And I do little samples for them, and I'll send, if I'm far away, you know, which I mostly usually am, I send photos of it, me draping it on there, or I send side, you know, front. And and if I'm in the actual, you know, place, like once I go for fittings or that, and to, you know, meet with the group, a lot of times I myself have draped something myself, and I'm like, no, this is exactly what I want. And I actually did that recently with the piece for Bordeaux that just happened a few months ago. They were doing a great job, but it really wasn't, you know, still like to my liking. So I went in there, I was there, and I said, no, you know, let me do something for you. So I draped the first bodice myself, and I showed them, and they had the stitcher sew it down and everything. And so that's a really great way of, you know, getting what you want. But no, I've had other disasters too. Yeah, that was, interesting. It is interesting the way sometimes people can interpret your design. So like what you said earlier, sometimes you don't draw the backs, or, you know, it's, yeah, it's definitely a good, the draper pattern maker definitely has to be creative for sure. And have a good eye, really. I mean, there's certain draper pattern makers that I love working with. And, If I'm working with a company, it doesn't happen very often, but if I'm working with a company that does not have an in-house costume shop, you know, that does happen quite a bit. Not to me normally, but there are many companies that have that. And so then I have to find my own team. And so there's people that I definitely work closely with, because I know they're, and they're very detail oriented like I am. And so, yeah, you have to trust them entirely.
All right. Excuse me. So I think we might have covered this, but I want to ask you directly, because we kind of talked about little pieces of it, but how do you see the future of the industry?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm always a glass full kind of girl, you know? And so I'm very positive about it. I remain positive, and I think it'll be a bit for us to get back to where we were. I think it's going to be a good amount of time, but I think it's going to be really, really amazing once it does happen, I think, because even now I've spoken to some people that really weren't, say, theater goers, or even art lovers in general, you know, fine arts, any kind of the arts. But I hear many, many times how important, what a loss it has been during this time, about how important really, you know, theater is, art is. And so I think more than ever, people are going to support it, you know, that never had before in their own way. And that's, I don't know. I think I have very high hopes for that. Yeah. I think we realized we took it for granted, honestly. And there, even me, who I obviously work in theater and worked in theater for so long. Sometimes it's like, oh, rushing to the show. You're late to the show. Or if it's a show that I'm designing, if I'm backstage right before the show, it's like, oh my gosh, I can barely get to the front of the house, you know, in time. Or it's just rush. You're just like, you have your, you know, you have your job, you're just trying to get your job done. And then, and so, yeah, more than ever, I think we, you know, we're going to support it. That's what I feel. That's what I hope.
I think that sounds beautiful. And I'm getting smiles from my crew because they know, you know, some of the things that we're working on. I think you just gave us some really excellent answers. So thank you.
Good.
All right. We're going to jump. We're going to get ready for our next one. And I really do appreciate it. Hopefully we can catch up with you again sometime.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. I loved it. It was great. Good luck on this podcast. This is a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Take care.
You too. Bye, Monica. Bye, Madeline.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us.
Join us.
Join us.
On Feed the Crew.